Okay. We're good now. Look at we had to at least have one setback. Okay. That's just
temporarily. We'll see.
Temporarily one setback, but like I said, it was muted. We are live here. Dog and Pony Show Brewing.
It's because Zach Clark had like six Colonel Lagers before starting this.
Yeah, you know. it's the delicious beer, people. You gotta understand where we're coming from. But we are live, like I said. We're at Dog and Pony Show Brewing. The fellas all together, Lions Collective, Aiden Hutchinson got extended. Like I said, trade deadline next week. We're gonna talk about that as well. So plenty to get to. We'll start with the Aiden contract. I mean, it was announced 11 a.m. on a Wednesday. All right. Thank you for that, by the way. Yeah. It's always the greatest timing with this type of stuff. He signs a four-year, $180 million deal, gets $141 million guaranteed. It's the most guaranteed money by an edge ever, I believe. So historic from that front. But the AAV just behind Mike Parsons, they got 45. Mike is at about 46, 47. But we were talking a little bit before the show as well, fellas. But what do you guys think of the initial deal here? Aiden's locked up. He has 2 years left on his current contract and then four more after that.
I think we all expected this to happen at some point. And really, Parsons was the domino, right? Mm-hmm. Like it started with Garrett, trickled down to TJ Watt. Hendrickson got a little bit of an adjustment to his deal. I think Crosby got an adjustment to his deal. Yeah. So you just saw this slow parade of edge deals getting done, leading to Hutchinson. And I think that he had the 2 years left, right? So he had this ability to wait, to sit it out. It was good for the Lions to, I guess, ensure maybe or check the box of what they already knew based on what they saw in the practice field. And so it let him be that guy that he who signs last signs for most, and maybe not from a average value, but guaranteed. We know guaranteed money is the most important thing on NFL contracts. And you said most for an edge ever. It's most for a non-quarterback ever. That's the huge figure right there.
Yeah, I go back to when we talked with Hutch for the first time this training camp. It was the first day of camp on our Fox 2 Lions training camp special show. And at that point, the edge market had already been reset, I believe, four times that offseason. First by Max Crosby, then by Danielle Hunter's restructure, then by Myles Garrett, then by TJ Watt. And when I asked Aiden what his thoughts on that were, he just sort of smiled and was like, it's a beautiful thing. And that was before even Micah Parsons reset it for a fifth time, man, in the past 12
by
months,
a
month later. And so it was no surprise that Hutch comes in right around Parsons' neighborhood. And also no surprise to any of us, I don't think, that he has, for the most part, maybe for the entire part, picked up where he left off last season. He looks like just as dominant a player, in some ways even more impactful. And you look at the way the salary cap is soaring in the NFL and the way that this contract will soon probably rank third or fourth among defensive ends. And you get the sense that by the time this deal kicks in 2027, after his fifth year option, it's going to look pretty darn good in the larger landscape of the NFL.
No doubt. I mean, that's kind of how these other contracts have gone for Lions. I think Sam is like eighth among wide receivers right now. So that shows you how fast things can change.
Man.
And I think, like, you know, going back to January, like when Crosby got his new deal, it's like it's increased something like 10, 12 million the last
35 chump change.
So it's pretty remarkable how fast things happen. But you figured the Lions would be in this position sooner rather than later with Aiden Hutchinson. They've sort of set aside money for this. As Brad Holmes told us at the owners meetings, you got to kind of can't go on every vacation you want. Can't spend everything you want to spend. But you can still get creative in some ways. You know, they're able to get DJ Reed. That was not pocket change, and as they're still saving up for these other guys. But yeah, I mean, with a guy like Hutch, he's a cornerstone. He's a franchise guy. You kind of expected this. I think I had his agents tweet notifications on since like March, because he usually tends to break it for his big guys. But to see it get done the way it did today, I think it makes a lot of sense. He's playing out of his mind. He still leads the NFL in pressures. He's third in win rate, tied for sixth or seventh in sacks. So he's having a great year. And it makes sense the Lions would lock him up and reward him the way they did.
And people will say, you know, why did he not wait, right? Like, he had 2 years to wait. He could have cashed in for more. Well, it's $141 million guaranteed starting in 2027.
Yeah.
Like, you don't ever think about the injuries, but that they happen in this league. Mm-hmm. And so if he was to suffer an Achilles or an ACL, Aleem McNeil never had an injury, right?
Yeah.
And he suffers the injury right after he signs his extension. And so it protects Hutchinson long-term as well. And, you know, the Lions are banking on a guy that really doesn't have a particularly long injury history.
Yeah.
On top of that, I mean, he clearly shows that if he does get hurt, he comes back bigger, faster, stronger than ever. He's a bionic human.
Yeah. I also think that there is now a realization among these core players that the sooner that they can all secure their own futures in Detroit, the better. And the longer they extend the Lions championship window. And I know Brad Holmes is kind of averse to the idea of windows, but this is their window right now with this core of players. And it's amazing when you look at the money they have allocated towards extending their own over just the past 2 years. If you include Derek Barnes, it's 10 players, and it is just shy of $1 billion.
Wow.
$1 billion that they have committed to their own players just over the past 2 years. And obviously the first big dominoes to fall were Amon-Ra and Panay the day of the draft back in 2024.
Jack Fox.
And it's only continued since. This regime has set a clear standard of rewarding its own players, and Aiden is naturally next in line, and there are more to come down the pike.
And players notice that, by the way. Like, I remember when Aleem got extended last year, and we talked to Jared for his weekly scrum, and he was just like, look, it's cool to see guys get rewarded for their hard work. And Aleem was a guy that came in as a third round pick and worked his way up the ladder and got extended and got a big deal. And he did things the right way. And that's ideally how the Lions want to build this thing. And so players notice that. If you put in the work, you're going to get paid. They're going to keep you here long term.
Yeah.
Now, there might be some restrictions going on when you're paying guys $1 million collectively. But when you look at it, it's like that players see that and they're mindful of that. And it makes them want to work even harder, especially with a group like this.
Yeah. I think we probably missed a context clue when Aiden was talking about Elkwardin Muhammad getting paid this week. Clearly he was satisfied with what he got.
Mention that.
So now he, but Will brings up windows, and it's kind of where I went with the post signing column, right? Like, Detroit's window is pretty expansive, you know? So Goff is what, 31 years old, right? Like, you just celebrated 31st birthday. You look at other pocket passers, you know, they're playing well into their late 30s. Drew Brees was 40. Aaron Rodgers, not really a pocket passer, but he's now, right? Mm-hmm. But I mean, late 30s, still producing. And so I'd say conservatively, you've got 5 really good years of Goff, potentially up to 7-8 years of Goff. And like, that's the key to a winning NFL, right? Good quarterback play. Goff is playing at a Drew Brees-like level right now in terms of pocket efficiency. Now you got Hutchinson, 2030. You've got a few of those guys to 2029. Yeah. Goff's in that 2028 group. Like, this window is large. And you talk about, like, it was kind of a topic that came up during the Kansas City week, right? Like, this ability to stay on top is so hard to do in the NFL. It's really hard to stay in the bottom too, but the Lions manage that. And so now they're trying to stay at the top. Yeah. And to have this core together locked up for as long as it is, with a few more still kind of in there with Gibbs and Laporta and Branch kind of coming up next year, it extends this window of competitiveness, Super Bowl competitiveness, to I think at least 2028 and probably beyond a little bit.
Yeah,
that's actually a question in the chat. Cody Williamson says, so out of the big four, which I'm assuming he means Brian Branch, Sam Laporta, Jack Campbell, Jahmyr Gibbs, who gets extended? Who's the next to get extended? Because you have Jack and Jahmyr both have those fifth-year options, and then you have second-round picks, Brian and Sam Laporta.
Let me rephrase that question before when you guys answer. I say, which one's not going to get extended? Because I think you're probably looking at money for two, probably three of those guys. I don't know if you give it four, especially after the J. Mokes
right. And
also got done.
Go ahead, Colton.
It's on you, Colton. You tell us.
I was
it's time for a sip before
Justin
we answer this.
Translate J-Mo's memes last week, so you can answer this one first.
There's no easy answer here, because all these guys are very important to what the Lions do. In some ways, you can say, do you want to pay two safeties north of $20 million?
Right.
As they would do if they re-signed Branch. But I think Branch is probably the second best player on the defense.
Defensive weapon.
Right. Yeah.
Behind the one that just got extended today. So it's like, I would rather keep Branch. Jack Campbell's played awesome.
Yeah.
Do you want to pay a linebacker $20 million plus? Because I think that's probably, 18 to 20 maybe is where it starts. As I've thought about this more, I almost go Sam Laporta.
Yeah.
I think tight end's probably more replaceable. I know he's really good, and he does. Like, I go back to when they traded TJ Hockenson, and to me, it wasn't a matter of, like, do they want to invest in a tight end? It was just getting the right guy. And
that
draft class was going to have so many different tight end options. They went with Laporta for a reason, because he's selfless. He doesn't care about getting the ball. He's become an awesome blocker nowadays.
Better. I'm talking about the care about getting the ball.
Okay, fair enough.
Good blocker.
Fair enough. But I don't think he's really one to complain, at least publicly. So I do think tight ends are a bit expendable if you want to go that route.
Sure.
I don't think there's an easy answer here. For sure.
Yeah. Somebody's not getting credentialed to type in you in here.
Call them we
think we can agree that Gibb is the most obvious, right? I mean, he's become this team's most explosive offensive weapon. And I don't blame you for saying that. When you go back to the night they drafted him, they talked about drafting a defensive centerpiece for the next 8 to 10 years. And so it was very clear that he was from the very moment he arrived part of the long-term vision. So, and we call it a tie at the top between Jahmyr Gibbs and Jack Campbell. Sure. And I think Branch is a close second because of the way that he impacts the game in so many ways. Speaking of love letters, I won't write another one to Brian Branch, but you guys know exactly how I feel about who I think is maybe the most disruptive player on this defense. The reason that I think if one of them has to be left out, that it might be Sam Laporta is to piggyback on Colton's point. I think the gap between a tight end who's making top of the market money and a tight end they could find in the second or third round making rookie contract money in their eyes isn't that wide. And so if they can draft a replacement for Sam Laporta who has close to or similar production as him, who costs $15, $16, $17 million less per year, that just makes the most business sense to me. And this comes on a day, mind you, where Dan Campbell said the player who has taken the biggest jump in his eyes this year is none other than Sam Laporta. And it comes on a day where if you look at the PFF rankings, he is the top graded tight end in the NFL. But again, it's about allocating money in sensible ways. And I just think they could afford to replace him at such a saving that it would make sense to potentially let him go of those four.
That's news to me. Top rated tight end in all of PFF.
Among tight ends who have received 15 targets this season, he is the top rated tight end.
Yeah. And I think the thing that really stands out to me is, and I've written about it a few times, I talked to him about it, like the blocking has legitimately taken a big step. And that's not a skill set you would expect, especially for the body type, right? Like you just never thought it would take that step. I don't think they disliked TJ Hockenson. I feel like they really liked the player. The timeline wasn't right. Correct. Like we're just crapping all over each other's points.
Viewpoints.
But like
conflict is good.
It's the beer. It's exactly what it is.
Thanks. We're all going to end up on the report here. But the timing wasn't right when that contract was coming up to pay a top. They had other priorities coming up. You didn't need to be paying that guy that much money.
It's a luxury item at that point.
Yeah, and you had the draft class, as you mentioned. I look at it, I guess, as a bigger picture of the offense, right? You've got Amon-Ra locked up. Amon-Ra's got a career-high target share right now, and there's no reason to dial it down. Gibbs is becoming a bigger part of the offense, a bigger usage rate than ever, and again, no reason to dial it down. Those two guys are centerpieces. They're already struggling to find ways to get the ball to J-Mo. Laporta's usage is also inconsistent. It's up from last year, but it's inconsistent, right? Yeah. And David Montgomery, we know, is having some inconsistency with his production as well. So, like, can you pay that tertiary weapon, right? Or can you go get a guy that is maybe that land between Brock Wright and Sam Laporta, that guy that when you do need to throw it to him, he's reliable and maybe, you know, a better blocker than Wright is. And so I, you know, that to me is the bigger reason why if I had to pick one being out, it's probably Laporta. All those guys are going to get top of the market deals for their position.
Are we completely ruling out the possibility that they find a way to bring back all of them? Like, is that mathematically impossible? Because the way they've already attacked this would suggest that it's not. I think we all accepted the fact that J-Mo is going to be the odd man out based on the way Brad Holmes himself talked about him and the cost of paying receivers. And then he turns around like 2 months later and he's like, hey, here's $83 million for a guy with like 83 career catches.
Right.
And it made you think twice about the fact that this actually might be feasible. So I don't want to rule out that either. And they've become such wizards, the Lions have, at manipulating and negotiating the salary cap that I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility.
I wonder two things with, you know, some of the money that since we talked to Brad Holmes there in March and he was kind of laying those hints that J-Mo might be out. And I think we all read those tea leaves that he presented. Two things happened. One, the Kirby Joseph extension is a little weird. If you look at the structure of it, like it's got some built-in
I'll pay safety though.
That I mean, he's
got to say it. That's important. Yeah.
And he's great, and he continues to be great. Yeah. But like, who knows what this knee injury looks like a couple years? If it's if it's something that's arthritic or chronic, you know, like maybe they move on there. That frees up some space. Not saying cut Kirby Joseph, just presenting it. Two, I knew they were aware of the possibility. I still think they were a little surprised Frank Regno stepped aside, right? I think that gave them some extra budget to spend on a Jameson Williams, who also took a massive leap forward this offseason. And I know that hasn't translated yet to the field, and I feel like it's made us look a little bit like liars, but it's true. Like, the guy is such a better player, even if it's on the practice field, than he was 2 years ago. And so, again, the Lions reward guys that invest, that work hard, that put effort into getting better. They rewarded JMO, but I think they had a little bit more to play with than maybe Brad thought. And so I'm also not ruling out all four of them get done. I think it's complicated, but God knows how many void years Mike Disner can throw on all these deals.
Just to round that off, like, you wonder if Taylor Decker becomes their next unexpected savings. I mean, that's a guy season goes the way that all Lions fans want it to go, could very well step away.
No
could
doubt.
Very well. I'm not. Yeah. Right, breaking news here. I don't want to speculate too much, but I think we all agree that if they reach the mountaintop this year, that's a guy that could decide to call it a career. Yeah. And that would be your next surplus that kind of rises out of the blue.
Yeah, they're going to have to find ways to save some way.
Yeah.
And like, when you start looking at the contracts that are coming up, like, you want to keep everyone, but I don't know if you can. So if there is a front office that can figure out a way to keep all these core dudes, it would be this one. But easier said than done.
Yeah.
You know, I think you look at that interior of the offensive line, it goes beyond Ragnar, right? Like, you got to deal with Mahogany for a few years. Yep. You got to deal with Ratledge for four seasons. And, you know, I think probably Glasgow's coming off the books next year. He's under contract, but I would not be surprised if, whether it's Ratledge moving over to center or they draft someone else, they've got Miles Frazier, kind of the unknown wild card. They could take another guard in the second round. Like, There's a potential to save a lot of money. Think about when that was Jonah Jackson, Frank Ragno. I was going to say Kevin Zeitler, but those three weren't together. But there was a lot of money invested in the interior of the offensive line. If you can get three guys on rookie contracts, it gives you the money to kind of the flexibility to spend elsewhere.
I got to bring up this comment. Trevor Woods says, Colton, are you drinking wine at a brewery? Can you just clear? I'm just having your back here. Can you just clarify?
tell him it's a sour.
It's a blueberry sour. Dude, that one is unreal.
It's delicious. It's not wine. All right.
It's a blueberry sour with like a sweet, creamy marshmallow finish. It's incredible.
Because it's got the nitro finish.
Yes.
Can't do my guy Colton like that, man. He's not drinking wine. All right. We will not take that here at Dog.
Hey, listen, I will not take any slander for red wine.
Just come in and try it yourself.
Yeah.
How about that? And there you go. The Lions Collective for $1 off. If you have 8 beers, your 9th one is essentially free. I know not many people come in for free now, but I'm just saying.
It's like the Will Birchfield college rule.
I'll find the cap space for every beer on this menu.
Kyle's Brad Holmes, man. You should hear him talking about our tab. I mean, this guy makes it work. Let me ask you, Brian Branch is coming back this week. I know he spoke to the media, you guys, and
all-time
he had some great – yeah, great. I mean, I learned that the guys out there last week are better than the starters. I learned that he is – going to play aggressively and have this different mentality as if he already did it. That's just new surprise to me.
More aggressive.
Aggressive than one of the most aggressive players in the entire NFL. But what will Brian Branch's return mean to this defense? Because it feels like we're getting, he's getting baptized today, actually, Wednesday.
Probably already baptized.
Yeah.
Congratulations. He'll be back on Sunday against the Vikings. What do we make of his return? What kind of impact will he have on Sunday against this rookie quarterback, technically, and J.J. McCarthy?
I mean, this is not a Liam McNeil. This isn't a guy that's been missing for 10 months.
Right.
And you're just kind of desperate to get back what he brought. We know what Brian Branch is. And Eric Hallett did a phenomenal job playing the cosplaying Brian Branch, right? He had some tremendous plays, honestly, in that Tampa game. A couple really advanced rotations and tackles and stuck his nose in there and ate a $50,000 lowering your helmet hit from Rashad White early in the game. Like, did great. But like,
my Branch was like, who was that? Who are you?
Yeah.
Well, he did watch the game, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
But like, Brian Branch is one of the 3, 4, 5 safeties in the NFL that can do everything.
Yeah.
He can do everything. He can play deep. He can play in the box. He makes tackles behind the line of scrimmage. He can cover a tight end man to man. Like I said it earlier to Colton, he is a defensive weapon you can deploy in so many different ways. And so anytime he's on the field, your defense is better. And look, he's probably going to see some Hockenson in this game. He's probably going to be in the field, you know, trying to drop Aaron Jones and Jordan Mason in the backfield. Like, he's just going to be everywhere. And don't be surprised if he blitzes, because he does that too. And I thought he was going to do it more, if I'm going to be honest, because he looked really good blitzing during camp.
Yeah, there's nothing Brian Branch can't do on the football field. We've seen him for 3 years now.
Control his emotions.
Yeah. That's going to be the big thing. Yeah. I mean, honestly, we joke, but like, that's a big deal for him.
Yes.
And, you know, he said his coaches have talked to him about how teams are going to try to get under his skin and like get him to react.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing that he's going to have to work on. And it's a tough balance, because you want him to play with that fire that makes him so great and like such a demon on the field.
Yeah.
But like, you can't be getting yourself suspended, or even, you know, as we saw in the Green Bay game, getting flagged for, you know, stupid stuff. You know, you just can't. Those are bonehead mistakes. You can't make that. So I do wonder if he's, you know, how he's going to look on the field, if he kind of tempers back, holds back some of that aggression. That's not what he said the other day. So I am curious what type of Ryan Branch we get. But at the end of the day, this is one of the best safeties in the league. He can do it all. He can hit like a linebacker. He can cover like a cornerback. He can blitz and beat, you know, running backs and pass protection and whatnot. So he just makes his defense better. I think he's the second best defensive player on this team, I know it sounds easy, but there are a lot of good defensive players on this team. I think you can rank them, you know, four or five guys. And, you know, if it's a different order, I wouldn't argue too much outside the top one. But he's such a great player, man. And I think the Brian Branch we saw at that press conference yesterday, you know, the easygoing, soft-spoken, respectful guy, like, that's kind of who we know him to be, not the aggressor that's going to make him out to be on the field. But he does have that switch and needs to learn how to manage it a little bit better.
Yeah, I've already heard some fans worrying that Branch getting baptized will soften him in some ways. It will not. Not in the least. And it sounds like that was something he wanted to do even before the
he just starts choosing love all of a sudden. Yeah, I mean, come on, guys.
And I know Terrion did the same thing. So maybe it's just going around the DB room right now. But I do think that we will see a different Brian Branch after the whistle. I think we'll see the same Brian Branch between the whistles. And that's the player that the Lions and Dan Campbell want to see. And Dan Campbell has been clear about this and on Brian Branch about this for a while. And I think he kind of re-delivered the message with maybe even more authority this time, that like, while you have to keep your cool, you also can't sacrifice your fire. And we will not see Branch do that. As he said yesterday, when I asked him, you know, what player should we expect to see? Because Jim O'Neill said, we'll see an even more motivated Brian Branch, which, as he said, is a scary thought. And when I asked Branch what version of him we should expect to see, he was like, he smiled first and was like, just relentless aggression. So that player will be on the field. And I think when you try and like contextualize or describe what Branch's impact is, think about it through the eyes of JJ McCarthy, who is making his return to action on Sunday after 7 weeks off and only with two games under his NFL belt, and is probably watching tape from the Lions' most recent performance against the
Bucs. Should get baptized. Yeah. If I'm being honest,
he might be getting baptized on Sunday. I mean, you know, 4 p.m. at 1 o'clock, between the hours of 1 to 4, Mr. Preacher might stop by for the field at halftime to dip JJ maybe in like a Gatorade bucket. Yeah. But if you think about it through his eyes, he's watching that performance on Monday night, and he's seeing this defensive line that is flying off the ball, that has just reinserted a hugely impactful tackle in Aleem McNeil, that has Aiden Hutchinson occupying double teams and triple teams and sometimes still beating them, that has three aggressive, attacking, smart linebackers playing in concert. And then he's like, oh, and they're getting Brian Branch back? Shit. Like, where is that guy going to be coming from? And they might have Kirby Joseph back, but especially Branch, because he puts so much strain on a defense and puts him or on an offense and puts him in conflict so often, because there's no telling where he might be deployed on a given snap. And so if you just try and process it through McCarthy's eyes, you understand how much angst he is probably feeling because of Brian Branch's return. And that's what he does to all coordinators and the quarterbacks alike.
It's so weird, like Colton bringing back the comment where Branch said like teams will be agitating him and trying to get under his skin. Like, it's all circular. Like, that's what they used to say about Sue, and it certainly a lot of guys that kind of have that hot-headed mentality. I still can't correlate those two individuals, though.
It's tough.
Like, Ndamukong Suh was an asshole off the field and on the field. And, like, that worked for him. And he was an incredible football player. And the ability to channel that worked really well. We don't see that side of Branch ever. I mean, how many times did he say, sir, in his little press conference? It's just his politeness is uncomfortable off the field. And I still have a hard time wrapping my head around, like, his ferocity out there. But I was thinking of this is a really random reference, but I read a Michael Crichton book when I was like a kid. It was called The Terminal Man. And this guy had basically like triggers in his brain when he was like getting violent. There was like an electrical stimulus that calmed him down. Like, can we get like Brian Branch a shock collar?
If it's Sue Shocks, it's Sheila. You mean business this time, Brian.
I mean, this is the next logical evolution of the low pad to avoid the high hits that they bought him this offseason.
Yeah, I think, I mean, someone just put in here, Cody, shout out to you. He says, first he baptized Juju, then he gets baptized today. Really came full circle. It's a great story. It's why we have so many great storytellers.
And it sounds like he baptized Juju on behalf of the NFL. There were many defensive players who agreed.
Notice not one player came out and disagreed with his decision. I mean, if you haven't noticed that. But I do want to ask you guys, because by the time we're live next Wednesday, we'll be recapping the deadline. It's Tuesday, so this is our last time really share our thoughts on what we expect. And I do want to get your guys' thoughts on this, because as soon as the Aiden Hutchinson extension came out, many of the comments I've seen on our channel was this: it's almost out of desperation. I get it, but it has to mean a move's coming, right? Everything has to just mean a move's coming. You guys know this.
It's always what's next.
Well, it's like, wait, Aiden's extended? That means Trey Hendrickson's going to be a Lion.
It might just mean that Aiden's extended.
But yeah, that's literally it. What do you guys kind of expect? What's a fair expectations for fans come Tuesday for this Lions team?
I would not discount a move. I don't anticipate a big move. One hasn't been Brad's MO, and it doesn't mean that at some point he flips a switch and goes all in, but I look at the roster, and I did this a couple weeks ago, and I'm like, where do you displace a starter on this team? Like, Muhammad is balling.
Yes.
Like, he's balling. And I realize he's more pass rush only, but like Tyler Lacy's holding it down in the run stopping department, and Marcus Davenport's going to get back eventually. Presumably Josh Pascal gets back eventually. So unless you can get like an absolute game changing edge, like, you don't bench Muhammad. Cornerback, that's the rumor today that they're calling around on cornerbacks. Like, we saw DJ Reed out there running on the side on whatever day we just watched practice Tuesday. They're all squirrely this year. Yeah. But like, so if you're going to acquire a cornerback, are you benching Terrion Arnold? Are you benching and destroying the confidence of a young player that is your literal future of that position? Right. And so, like, could they use a little bit of tackle depth better than Dan Skipper? Sure. Could they use some cornerback depth that's better than Nick Whiteside? I know Nick Whiteside is the flavor of the month right now, but like, sure. But like, if Trey Hendrickson didn't have the hip, and I know Trey Hendrickson was a thing last year and we all spent all this time shooting it down, but if Hendrickson didn't have the hip that was causing him to miss time for a dude that never misses time, by the way, and you said, hey, $8 million for half a year, Trey Hendrickson, for whatever the ESPN trade protection was, like a second, and you get back a fourth, like, okay, that's Trey freaking Henderson.
Yeah,
like, I could get it, but like, other than that, like, I think they're good, right? Like, they're relatively good. We're looking more at Donovan Peoples-Jones-esque move, I think, more than Trey Henderson. And well, Zadarius Smith would, like, that caliber move, I think, would really excite the fan base, but that's redundant to Muhammad again.
Yeah, I think in some ways the flavor of the month matters, in that, like, the way the secondary played last time this team was on the field may have changed some of the calculus or the perceived urgency for the Lions at the trade deadline. Like, they were forced to watch their entire reserve secondary minus Samik Robertson play against a really good quarterback and a really good passing attack, and they held up, and that has to encourage them that they don't necessarily need to make bold moves in the event of injuries or to provide themselves insurance at the deadline. Like, I know Reek Woolen is the name that is probably the biggest on the cornerback market, a very good player who makes some sense as a pending free agent. But I think the Lions are very confident in DJ Reed returning to form, in the Terrion Arnold they saw in Cincinnati being the Terrion Arnold they get going forward, and in the fact that, like, between Rock Ya-Sin and Avante Maddox and even your Nick Whitesides and Arthur Mollets, that you have enough there to get you through any further injury concerns. And I just want to echo your point about Muhammad, because I know edge rusher has been such a focal point for this fan base for, I don't know, 5 years.
Yeah.
Ever since Hutchinson arrived. If you trust the metrics by pass rush win rate, by quarterback pressures, by PFF grades on overall defense and pass rushing, Al-Qaeddine Muhammad has been a top 20 edge rusher, a defensive end in the NFL.
By the way, there's a full transparency. I've struggled with this. Yeah. Over the last, like, I'm trying to, like, tell myself he is doing this. You have a big enough sample size now. Even I think I can relate to the fans where I'm like, this has to fall.
Hold on, hold on.
But it's pessimistic for sure.
Where did we talk about this? Where did you hear about check out Muhammad before you panic? Where did that come up?
Was
maybe
that
our debut episode?
Maybe right here on the Lions Collective.
Possibly. Guy in the Supersonics hoodie.
And look, if you would ask most of those fans when the season began if they would sign up for a top 20 defensive end opposite Hutchinson,
no doubt. Yeah.
They would have all happily signed up. And right now, that's what the Lions have. So I don't think the need is pressing at all at edge rusher, especially considering that Davenport, and I get it, it's Davenport asterisk, will return, and that Josh Pascal will return. And then just to round off my point here, I agree that offensive tackle would be a smart, sensible position to add. Good luck acquiring an offensive tackle at the trade deadline. Are rarely moved, especially players who could be reliably, dependably inserted into an offense in December if Decker can't play, or January. This isn't my study, so I should give credit to wherever I saw it on Twitter, but
give credit to somebody.
Someone out there deserves this credit. Someone tracked since 2002 the number of offensive linemen who have been traded at the deadline, which was either in October or November. Mm-hmm. Since 2002, so we're considering 24 trade deadlines here. 7 offensive linemen have been traded, and 3 were offensive tackles. So, like, yeah, I agree. They should try and find someone that would be better than Dan Skipper or Cochran or Manu. I just don't think that player is available at all on the trade market. Every team, no matter their spot in the competitive cycle, hoards good offensive linemen and especially good tackles because they are so hard to find.
I've only heard one name. I don't know if you've heard the same. Kelvin Beachum, Arizona. He's a swing tackle right now. He started in Pittsburgh, started in Arizona. Like, again, like, I don't know how much at this stage of his career, how much better he is than Dan Skipper.
I mean, it seems like they're pretty comfortable with Skip. I mean,
sure,
he knows everything about this offense. He's been here in the system for a few years now. So, like, I get it. I agree. Like, it's hard to find these linemen. Teams don't want to trade them. And I don't think there's a ton of good ones, as we see every preseason. Like, these guys get torched. So it's like, you want to trade for one of those guys? Those are the guys who might be available.
Yeah.
It's like bottom of the barrel dudes.
You want Evan Neal?
No, like, thanks.
If Decker's, and obviously there's, like, uncertainty floating around Decker, but, like, if that was a larger question mark and you really felt like he was a good chance of being done, like, yeah, then you go make the move that the Vikings made last year where they Cam Robinson, correct? Mm-hmm. Where they traded for Cam Robinson to replace Darcel. Like, I would advocate for that, but, like, I think they feel pretty good about Decker being able to play through what amounts to just a lot of nasty inflammation. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's probably the best way to describe it, is just that shoulder is a mess of inflammation. It's uncomfortable. It's painful, but, like, it's functional. And as long as it's functional, they're going to keep rolling them out there.
Before we get to the sleeper read, which I have to tell you about, I want to, this is a question that, cause you guys kept talking about it, and I think I can speak for fans on this. Booter in the chat, shout out to you, my guy. He says, does anyone in this panel know what the Pascal injury is in, like, a timeline? Because it seems like every time it's brought up, he dismisses it.
It's very vague.
It's very vague. And I think the thing I said the other day was, I'm treating it, to be honest, guys, I'm treating it. I would be surprised. I just said, I'll be surprised if he returns. That way, if he returns, then I get happy about it. Because it's hard to even predict, like, if he'll return. I don't know what it is. All due respect to him, it's probably something more private matter, but
I can do this. I could say it's not cancer related. I think that's maybe a floating concern out there with the fan base.
It's a big one.
Checked in on that. It's not that. I will say, when I was doing some research on the Aleem piece Pascal was working with the same guy, and there was a video posted, and he was doing some shoulder work. So it might be bad. It's a non-football injury, so clearly happened sometime in his own private workouts. But, you know, who knows? It just, it's clearly not healing the way that they expected. It's not progressing the way they expected.
I do, but for those reasons and more, I do think it's important to maybe get some edge depth. Like, we can talk about how good Alkadi Muhammad's been. Mm-hmm. He's been awesome. But if he goes down for whatever reason, and then you're really kind of scraping some dudes for the bottom of the barrel. So it's like, if there's like a Matthew Judon, like, mm-hmm. I know they checked in on him. Like, he's in Miami. He could probably be had, because that's the team that's going to be selling most likely.
Could have been had a month ago for whatever.
Yeah, but I'm saying, if you know, needs change, you know, you get a little closer to the playoffs, you don't want to repeat of last year. We talked about how scarred this front office is from last year's like shuffling to get guys here. So if that's a move you want to check in on as a depth piece, when you don't know what Davenport's situation is, what his timeline looks like, Pascal, there's some uncertainty there. Maybe that's a move that makes sense for them, but I'm not really buying the cornerback talk yet.
Yeah.
And then
I'm with you on that.
Tackle, as we mentioned, I think it's kind of hard to get to.
Breaking news. Actually, I broke it a couple weeks ago, but Hassanin, week 10. That doesn't solve the problem. No. But
he's gonna be mad. You know what?
He's been watching Hutch tape nonstop.
Entire time. You got a guy coming back that'll die on the field. All right. So this is a lot of,
He and Brian Branch. It's over.
These guys. Yeah.
But, I checked in on that. It sounds like his injury settlement expires in week 10. So I think there's expectation he'll be back with the team either before the next game or after the next game. It wasn't totally clear, but again, I don't think that solves your edge depth.
Gets a little closer.
It's a body. Yeah. It is a body.
I've seen Tyree Wilson's name floated out there, a former top 15 pick who's had inconsistent production through three seasons with the Raiders. They're a team in transition, as they always are. They've been a team in transition for 15, 20 years. Maybe he's available. I know Jalen Phillips seems to be like the biggest name outside of the outlandish ones on the on the edge rusher market. Bradley Chubb as well is out there, but
the whole Dolphins roster.
Hey, by the way, don't check Lions Twitter. Kayvon Thibodeau, throw him in that equation. I guess that's another one people.
Yeah, I could have accepted a Keon White with the parameters of that trade. Like, I don't know. I guess I'm not too familiar with what he's doing now, but like, I liked him a lot coming out, and he fits that stylistic, big frame, push the pocket guy. But, you know, I think it was the Eagles that jumped in and got that for
49ers.
Thank you. 49ers jumped in and got that.
By the way, they have like 9 sacks on the year. 49ers. I'm like, I don't think Keon White solving that problem.
Still there?
Well,
you take away Nick Bosa, right? Yeah, we saw that last year. You take away Ian Hutchinson.
That's a fan base that can complain about the pass rush. I'm just going to say that.
They've also complained about the injuries.
Nobody
deals with injuries worse than the 49ers the last 3 years.
It's unbelievable. We'll be right back after a quick message from our sponsor, Shot Through Sleeper.
I can't wait to see.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
Even if it's...
All right, let me tell you about our friends over at Sleeper. One of the fastest organically growing fantasy platforms in the entire world. Like you just saw in that commercial, by the way, Sleeper Picks. All you got to do is choose 2 to 8 of your favorite players. You pick more or less than the projected lines, and you could win some money. And by the way, what you should do is use the code HMA. You get a $100 deposit on top of what you already deposit. And they have a free $20 deposit, which is not related to the other deposit if you use our code HMA. So Sleeper's taking care of their people.
I need pen and paper here.
We appreciate that. Write this down. You can replay it. They take care of their people and keep using the app. It's one of, like I said, one of the fastest organically growing fantasy platforms in the entire world.
Hey, next week, bring us an over under.
You know what? I will do that. By the way, guys, I will not tell you what I'm doing right now.
Trade for it, the trade deadline. Over under 4.5.
How many Dolphins players? 2.5. Over. Bring them all home. But we got more to get to. Like I said, we have our we still have our dog and pony show brewing picks, which we will get to. I want to talk about this game a little more because the offense has been the big storyline, and we discussed. Well, we didn't get to discuss yet, but the players and coaches spoke. They talked about J-Mo a lot.
Yeah.
All right, Jared Goff, yeah, well, you know what? To no one's surprise, you're paying him $28 million to block. He's not a blocker. Yeah. Let me get into what he said. So Jared talked about, took some accountability a little bit with just the offense. I mean, he talked about they're winning. So obviously they're not going to complain about not getting J-Mo the ball. But he took some accountability on situations where maybe he can get him the ball. Scotty Montgomery was, I think, the most forthright or the most direct about it. He's like, yeah, no, we're going past the ceiling with this one. Like this guy, we're going to no middle ground. So just speaking about the offense, it seems to be about J-Mo. It seems to be about, at least over the last couple of games, Jared's been sacked, I think, 9 times last 3 games. Offensive line pass protection a little bit. I think that has to do with a little bit of getting J-Mo the ball. Dave Montgomery, where can this offense really grow the most, step up the most? What do they need to do on Sunday to kind of get back in order? They had a bye week, chance to correct some things. What's a fair expectation on Sunday?
Third down has to get better.
Yep.
Clearly, that's the
most glaring issue for this offense through the first 7 games. And it represents a really stark contrast from the past seasons, 2 seasons, when, you know, last year they were 4th in third down efficiency. This year they've plummeted to 21st. And that's just unbefitting an offense with as many weapons as this one has and with as sturdy as an offensive line as this has. And when you ask the coaches about it and the players, Goff included, they all point to a myriad of issues. And that's the truth. If you go back and look at the Bucs game, for example, they go 3 for 13 on third down, and almost every single one represented a different problem. And we don't need to break down all of them, but I did jot down a few today. Because Campbell was on the morning show this morning on 97 on the ticket.
He's got a checklist here.
And, you know, he mentioned
he's gonna
different
do it.
Issues that have popped up on third down. And, you know, it's an offensive lineman takes a false step and gets beaten. It's Goff can't get through his reads. It's a running back whiffs on a block. It's maybe a call we want back. And I'm going to take the first 3rd and 4 in the first quarter where Decker just gets beaten cleanly by Diaby off the edge. That's for a strip sack on 3rd down. And you can kind of hear Campbell's words this morning echoing in our heads where, you know, he references there's a couple linemen that might have wished they had taken a better first step. They wish they had set better, you know, or take the 3rd and 5 in the 2nd quarter where David Montgomery, after I had hyped up his pass blocking ability that very day, completely whiffs, picking up Dennis, the linebacker, on a blitz. And he gets home for the sack and ends that drive. And you can hear Campbell's words echoing again where he says there's backs and protection who might have missed that, might have had bad eyes on it. And lastly,
the target was on that play, by the way?
It would have been J-Mo.
Yeah, that's important.
It is important. And I'll just reference one more and then let you guys jump in. There was a 3rd and 5 in Tampa territory in the 2nd quarter where Goff did have J-Mo open on a crosser over the middle, and he just missed him. And Goff owned that yesterday. He said, if I put that on his chest or on his face, that's a conversion, and it might be an explosive game. But J-Mo... And this is where I question some of the scheme or some of the route tree. J-Mo runs a route that was like several yards beyond the sticks when it felt like he could have just run that one to or just beyond the sticks. And it would have made for an easier pass. It would have given the deep safety less of a chance to converge on that throw. And it likely would have resulted in a first down. But he cuts it a little deep. Goff throws it a little short, and it ends up being another miss. And when you go back and look at the 3rd downs, especially in regard to J-Mo, it feels like too many of his routes are a little bit redundant to other routes being run on those same plays. And he ends up in areas of the field near other receivers and in windows where it's either impossible or like ill-advised for Goff to attack. And so maybe that's one thing they can change. But when they talk about a different issue halting each of these plays, you review the tape and that really is the case.
And it's funny you say that, or Campbell says that, I guess, because one, I did a film review on Jameson Williams, 33 targets. 2, going to drop, hopefully tomorrow, a film review on all of David Montgomery's snaps. Mm. And what I realized with David Montgomery is the stack box narrative, right? Like, that's a big thing right now.
Yeah.
And really, the real problem is blocking.
Yeah.
And it's never one guy. I went through today, and I my kind of final synopsis was, Jameson Williams blew a block. Amon-Ra St. Brown blew a block. Mm-hmm. Brock Wright blew a block.
Yeah.
Sam LaPorta blew a block. Tate Ratledge, Christian Mahogany, Graham Glasgow, Panay Sewell. like you could find every offensive player on the roster mm-hmm. blowing a block on one of 73 carries for David Montgomery. And it's like, suddenly it stacks up really quick. And so I looked at
CJ Beathard.
Yeah, definitely a better problem.
He's going to pick up the blitz from the sideline.
Like, there are five backs right now with a 50% success rate in football of qualifying backs. I think Montgomery last year was 49.5. Like, that's a good rate. Right now, Montgomery's sitting at 39.5%, right? It's same thing as the third down, right?
Yeah.
And so everybody just kind of needs to be a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And I think with Mahogany and Ratledge in particular, like, this is young player growth, right? Yeah. It's just getting a little bit better with the young players. Everybody just taking that, such a cliche, but that 1% improvement. If everybody could just be a little bit better, make one more play a game, the third down percentage is going to improve. The David Montgomery success rate is going to improve. The Jamison Williams targets are going to improve. It's that simple. As stupid as it sounds, it's that simple.
Yep.
I think it's just stringing together those drives. And when they get to the red zone, they convert. I think they're third in red zone efficiency this season. So that hasn't been the problem. It's just, you know, getting there, I guess, enough. Because we've seen some drives stall out and whatnot so far this season. Going back to the Dave Montgomery discussion, like, I do feel like, you know, and pushing it forward to the Vikings game, I do feel like this is a perfect get-right opportunity. The Vikings are 26th in defensive rushing success rate. And I look at a game like this. I was reading my colleague at The Athletic, Alec Lewis, and he wrote a story, and I'll read it.
Shout out, Alec. Is,
why are the Vikings off to such a disappointing start in 2025? And I was like, oh, this is a perfect
story. I'll read this,
And so I'm going through some of the categories of too many sacks, and I look at their sack rate, which is like the second highest in the NFL. Apparently they have issues with they're going against jumbo personnel. And here's what Alex says: Pittsburgh, Cleveland, and Philadelphia deployed extra tight ends and additional offensive linemen, and opponents have tallied 676 yards versus the Vikings in these lists.
Ross, you know, dwelling offense, game.
Do you know an offense that deploys extra linemen?
I can think of one that might do that.
No, so this could be a good right game for this rushing attack. They want to go with a jumbo set, but really just a game from Dave Montgomery, just to get right. So again, the blocking has to be there, right? Like, it hasn't, based on your film review, but you know, he has been facing some sack boxes, but the guys around him can do a little bit more. And between him and JMO, there are some pieces on this offense, and it's hard because you have so many massive feet and whatnot, but they can do a better job of getting these guys more involved. And I'm sure that's something they looked at during the bye.
Yeah. I think I brought this up in the last podcast, was spitballing at the time. I didn't have the data to back it up, but just the way they were using Gibbs as a starter and bringing Montgomery in.
Yeah.
The games where he struggled the most is he's come in on the third offensive series, which is almost the end of the first quarter in most of those games. And the games where they've tried to get him right, and it didn't work with the Bucs, but it did work with the Bengals, is he was getting more involved in the first and second series. And so I think that's going to be an adjustment coming out of the bye. I think they're going to get Montgomery involved a little bit earlier just because they know Gibbs is the 2-minute drive guy. They know if they fall behind in the fourth quarter, Gibbs is the guy. And so I think there's going to be a little bit better balance to their backfield coming out of the bye.
If they can just convert more on third downs, they'll have more plays. And if they have more plays, they can spread the ball around more often. And some of this angst around JMO and even Laporta to a lesser degree will solve itself. Because I think the biggest and simplest reason that JMO hasn't been involved as he was last year is they have lacked the plays to do that. And that's because they haven't sustained enough drives.
Yeah. And I mean, put numbers behind it, 66 plays per game last year, 60 this year.
That's a substantial difference.
It is. And even more so passes. They're throwing four less passes a game. It's not a small, I think a 12% decrease, if I'm remembering correctly. Like, 12% is a lot in terms of weekly targets available. And you look at JMO, he's down, I think, 30% targets per game. I think it's down from 6 to 4. Yeah. And so, like, that's a big part of the problem.
Yeah, their explosive pass rate, even with the struggles getting JMO the ball, and we know he's such a deep weapon, is still 8th in the NFL at 14.7.
Yeah.
Are those all catch and run, Colton?
So that I was going to say, I think a lot of it has to do with those explosive plays coming over the middle with yards after the catch, more so than the deep ball. So, like, they're getting those explosive in other ways. You'd like to see it more with the downfield shots, and that's why you pay a guy like JMO. But if he's still stretching the field and creating those opportunities over the middle, I think that's the important thing. And I know we said that a million times, but eventually, you know, you're going to hit on those long targets, and they're going to be there, and JMO's going to be happy.
Yeah.
I think I looked it up. Goff 13 deep shots all year, which is not enough. And by deep shots, I mean 20 yards beyond the line of scrimmage. He's only connected on four.
Yeah.
Asked him what he was happy about and unhappy about. Listed off a lot of things he was happy about. He said it needs to be more aggressive. When I hear aggressive, I think deep shots.
Yeah, for sure.
And so that's just an area where this offense can grow a little bit.
See, every now and then a golf scrum is actually pretty revealing.
I only go to like one out of six.
Slacker.
Yeah, as a viewer, I view one out of casual. Six. So I speak for Lions fans. It's like, oh, golf spoke.
Okay, more productive places to be.
Yeah. Well, I will say, and given what everyone saw in training camp, you know Johnny Moe was showing off those deep shots. So that's something they do want to implement. Sure. We have about 6 minutes left. Again, for people that are just tuning in, we are at Dog and Pony Show Brewing. We got a remote show. We have beer. We're talking football. We're all together. We're out in Oak Park. No wine. No wine.
Cider here, too.
I had him put it in a grown-up glass.
Mine comes in a sippy cup, usually.
Yeah. We're having a blast here. It's packed out here. You guys should definitely come out here. We'll do more shows in the future. So shout out to Kyle for taking care of us. But we got about 6 minutes left. It's time to give our Dog and Pony Show Brewing our picks of the week. Our pick of the week. And while we're here at Dog and Pony Show Brewing, Lions Vikings. I think the Lions are favored by, I think last time I checked yesterday, it was 8.5.
Wow. That's the right number.
I know. It's just a lot.
It is a lot.
Won 14 plus games last season. It makes sense, but
it's the quarterback
sticker
effect.
Shock to me.
That's it.
Yes.
Yeah. It's the quarterback effect, but yeah, I think 8.5, it could move. I mean, someone in the comments can check it recently, but
the over under for Hutchinson sacks.
And for Justin Jefferson yards against Amik Robertson, who notoriously clamps up Jay Jettis.
Yeah, bet the under
between those two today because what else am I doing?
Remember, we talked to Amik last year before that clash, and he brought up the high school camp they went to when they had to be literally pulled apart by coaches because they were going at each other.
So great.
They were going at each other
so hard. Why am I just realizing
that?
He
stepped up in that game and maybe he had the best game of his life on national TV
in
a must-win game. And went a long way towards, but I need
the
to see
first
I need
rep,
to see those.
He jams Jefferson like out of bounds. It's like a Michael Orr blindside block.
Yeah, why am I just realizing we get a Meek and Justin Jefferson again? That just clicked
get
in my head.
Fantastic.
Yeah, get your popcorn. But what's the picks of this week? I mean, 8.5 point spread. Yeah. What do we think?
Go ahead, Colton.
Yeah, I mean, just going off that, we're making picks off the gate. I think the more I do research on this Vikings team, I just think the Lions are a really good matchup in so many ways. Like, the interior pass rushers they brought in this offseason, Hargraves and Jonathan Allen, have not been great for them from what I've read. I think the Lions will be able to run the ball, as we talked about earlier. Jared Goff is excellent against the blitz. The Vikings blitz more than any team in the NFL, and Goff has proven to have answers to the test against Brian Flores' defenses.
Yeah.
So, and then you got the quarterback play, a young quarterback with an offensive line that allows the second highest sack rate. And you got Aiden Hutchinson, a freshly paid man on the other side. Yeah. So, I struggle to find ways the Vikings can keep this close, so I'll go 31-17. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Man, I already had 30-17. Like,
the brain. I had 31-20, so this has to happen.
Stick to the gun.
I feel all of that, and you're right, 42% blitz rate, but like, I know Frank Ragnow was so important to kind of deciphering and figure out those blitz codes, but Goff has Brian Flores' number, and that's a really impressive thing to have under your belt, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think there's going to be this concerted effort to have a little bit more balance in the offense this week. I think we're going to see a little bit more JMO. We're going to see a little bit more David Montgomery. And honestly, when you have that balance, it makes Detroit's offense a little bit trickier to find out figure out when you don't know where the ball is going. They've got all those weapons that are so valuable. Yep. And so I don't trust JJ McCarthy yet. I'm not saying he won't be a good quarterback, but he's got two games under his belt. Yep. And this pass rush is kind of feeling itself right now after the Tampa game. Aleem McNeil was an absolute difference maker. We don't know if Muhammad's going to play through the hamstring injury, but I imagine he will. And so I like the Lions to kind of cruise to one of their classic comfortable wins. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the Vikings interior pass rush, because even though maybe it hasn't been as good as they've hoped, it is an easy reason to talk about the Lions interior offensive line, which has really answered the bell for this team this year. And I think the biggest question, including the coordinators entering the season for me anyways, was
would that offensive line remain a strength? Would it still be one of the, say, 10 best in the NFL? I don't think we could fairly expect it to be one of the two best or three best as it was with Zeitler and Ragnow and those guys, but it could it be an asset? And you look up seven games into the year, and it has, and in no small part because of the way that Tate Ratledge and Christian Mahogany have stepped in and stepped up. When Zeitler and Ragnow left, they took 20 years and 300 plus starts of combined experience with them. And the Lions replaced it with, do the math real fast, 10,468. And the Lions replaced it with essentially none. I mean, Ratledge was fresh out of Georgia. Mahogany had two career starts, including the playoffs under his belt. And there were legitimate questions. And that week one game brought all of those fears to like pretty glaring and ugly fruition. And ever since, those two have been really sturdy, and they've had their lumps along the way, like any offensive lineman will, but by and large, those guys have been really, really solid. And I love what Dan Campbell said to them this week. Like, hey, you're not young anymore. Now, he had just called them young guys himself. Then he was like, and I sat them down and I said, you're not young guys anymore. And that was a terrible Dan Campbell impression. But he referenced that and delivered that to them on Monday. Cause I asked Tate and Christian about it yesterday. And they were like, yeah, I mean, that's the truth. Like there's no more time to be wasted, as Mahogany said. And Tate said, when I got here, the standard in that offensive line room was very clear from the coaches and the players. And our goal was to not let there be a drop off. And for the most part, there really hasn't been. And this is maybe one of their toughest tests yet against Allen and Grenard and Redmond, who you referenced yesterday, who's probably been their most disruptive,
surprising player
lineman. Yeah, for sure. Really surprising. Really surprising undrafted free agent a couple of years ago. And I just like the matchup between those three, including Glasgow, against the Vikings three. And I think if you look at the way Goff has performed against Flores' defense, there's no reason to think that they won't light it up again on Sunday. I'll take Lions 34, Vikings 14.
I thought we agreed that we were going to let them talk about Mahogany this week.
Yeah,
no, I just can't get through a week.
The PC clause, baby.
But, I talked to Christian Mahogany coming out of
Will's we both mouth. Agree we got to fire Father Leahy, president of Boston College.
No, I will say
that's
the Lions.
The Jesuit way.
The Lions have won the last five straight against the Vikings. They've scored 30 points in every one of those games. So I think they do it again.
Yeah.
They make it six straight in both the win category and the 30-point category. Give me 30-20. Lions.
Woo.
And there you go. We'll be live next week, Wednesday, to recap the NFL trade deadline.
Come See on in. Then. Dog and Pony Show Brewing.
Big shout out.
Big
last peers, fellas.
Cheers.
All right. Cheers. Dog and Pony Show Brewing. Shout out to Kyle. See you guys next Wednesday.
Football.